Hello, you are listening to Skip Intro. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me, Ian McNally, Bahi Yusuf, and Julian Yap. And we're talking today about the return of yet another franchise.
Jane, why don't you start at the beginning?
Something's happened to me. Something I can't control. And it scares me. It feels good.
She'll kill us all. A girl dies.
Get down!
Are you threatening me? Because that would be a bad idea.
More specifically, it is X-Men Dark Phoenix featuring... Featuring Sophie Turner. I was going to say Sansa Stark, but featuring Sophie Turner in the eponymous role. Okay, so what's the story here? Because it feels, my friends, like we have been here before.
Yes. You want to do
courtesy
this
courtesy of Brett Ratner, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
So this is the... I have problems with this as well. The third in the Newiverse... Fourth, yes. So we've had X-Men First Class, which reimagined the X-Men in the 60s, which is where they always kind of started off. We've had X-Men Days of Future Past, which I think is one of the best translations of a comic story to the movie screen, where they had the old X-Men and the new X-Men together, Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen and James McAvoy and...
Wolverine's in there.
Yeah, Wolverine's in there. All your favorites are there. Then they had Apocalypse, which is one of the worst movies ever made. And now they followed up with Dark Phoenix, which is another one of these beloved storylines that are going back decades. And they tried to do a little bit with Brett Ratner's X. X3 also had like multiple top titles. It was X-Men United, X-Men United We Stand, X-Men The Last Stand. This time around, the X-Men are still kind of beloved after their last adventure. So they have a telephone from the president and stuff, which I found shocking because the X-Men are usually on the run from something. Mm. And there's a problem with the space shuttle Endeavor and they go up to help. And along the way, Sophie Turner is holding together the space shuttle and encounters what they think is, they call it solar flare, but they don't know what it is. And when she gets back to Earth, they do get back to Earth and her powers start acting strangely and some new people start appearing in the face of Jessica Chastain. And what could it all mean? And what's this all, what are the ties to her history of joining the X-Men when she was a child and the fates of her parents? And that's what the movie's about.
Cool. So, did you guys like it?
Yes. Your reaction, Lynn, is exactly our reaction was when we saw the trailer. We were sitting there going, do we need this story? We don't need this story. Stop doing the story. Please, oh God, stop. And then we watched it and we were like, huh, this is actually pretty enjoyable. I kind of enjoyed myself. It's no Logan. It's no, you know, Avengers. But it's a great Saturday afternoon day out for a movie. Yeah.
The trailer made it look like X-Men contractual obligations. And you don't get any of that from any of the cast. Like everyone seems to be really involved in being there and giving the best of their characters.
I think it's kind of great that we had Apocalypse before this. We had a terrible trailer. We're having really late embargo, so no reviews can come out because this. It kind of surprises you how okay this film is.
It's not bad.
It's not great. Yeah. It's not a bad film, but it's not
bottom three.
Hang on, let me rephrase. It's not even good.
It's got all the elements of a good blockbuster movie, and it just happens to be X-Men as well, and gives you enough that an X-Men fan can enjoy.
Okay, because I'm pulling a lot of faces simply because I've watched all the X-Men, save for Apocalypse, because by that point I'd learned my lesson. and I watched the cartoon series. Like, I love X-Men. Oh, okay. And it means a lot. And I have seen each new iteration run itself into the ground at about the 2.5 movie point or the 1.5 movie point. You know, the first movie is always like, ooh, and we're back. And then the second movie is like, oh, we're back. And then the third movie is like, I didn't ask to be here. And so it's
not like
just,
this. Not like this.
So you've seen that kind of drop. And with this one, again, maybe because we've seen it done really badly before, I didn't know. I didn't know what to expect. And I didn't know what to expect from somebody new to the role of Jean Grey either.
I think there is a slight problem with that in that we get to see only a little bit of the X-Babies in the previous movie, the young Cyclops, the young Jean Grey, the young Nightcrawler, Quicksilver's the oldest of the group, really. It's weird that way. But I think that does hurt the film a little bit because you know that's Sophie Turner. You don't know what that means for Jean Grey. You know what I mean? It's like there's not quite a big character there, and there is a lot to be carried because she's dealing with cosmic power and what happened to her parents and all this other kind of stuff, and it requires a lot of capital A acting. And there's a lot of problems with the Dark Phoenix story as well, because it's generally about a woman gaining a lot of power and going crazy. And, you know, there's a lot of pitfalls when you're doing that. And I think the film does fall into some of those. There's numerous times she has to fly away because she's afraid she's going to hurt people. If the camera had gone with her, I think it would have helped be like, it's her story as opposed to she's a thing that happens to the other X-Men.
Yeah.
And I think that's a slight problem. But a lot of, like, McAvoy and Fassbender when he turns up are still great.
Yeah. I think it depends on what you want to tell in the story, right? Mm. And I think, like you said, Ian, the big thing is that it's called X-Men Dark Phoenix, except we don't follow the Phoenix. We follow the X-Men reacting to the Phoenix. And I mean, for better or for worse, I think this is okay. I think you're right. I think I would have liked to have seen the character of Jean Grey deal with a lot of these issues as opposed to just in the one scene where she's sitting...
crying in an alleyway?
Yeah, sitting beside a dumpster in the rain crying. I would have liked to have seen her sort of try and figure out what's going on as opposed to just being dragged along with the issues or the problems and the strengths and the emotions that she's going through.
Do we like Sophie Turner in this role?
I don't know yet.
Yeah. It's like you don't have a feeling for who she is. Yeah, who's Cyclops? I don't even know his name.
He's Ready Player One Boy.
Yeah. Ty Sheridan?
Yeah. Sure. Wow. Okay. That's his name.
We are just dragging a lot of references today. Okay.
But, you know, he's no James Marsden.
Yeah.
And he's wearing a big thing on his face. And, I mean, he is mostly given to whining in this. It's like, oh, Jean's gone. Oh, just, Professor's gone. What's going on here?
Oh, no. Jean.
You don't get to get an awful lot of their... I mean, there's an element of that being Scott Summers. We don't get an awful lot of character with these guys.
That's the thing. I was thinking earlier also with the flying away because I'm going to hurt somebody.
Mm. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of that is also just Jean Grey. So it's a little hard to separate what you're not liking in the moment.
But we don't know about Jean Grey.
In this movie version, like kind of divorce the comics.
Yeah, we don't know what... We haven't seen them go around the mansion. We haven't seen them interact with the other kids. We haven't seen them interact with each other. It's the movie opens with that space mission that we've seen in the trailer. And then it just sort of goes from there. So I don't know who Jean Grey is pre-Dark Phoenix, I think.
Like we got more in First Class and the other movies about who these people were. Like, Charles and Raven sitting in the kitchen talking about a better world kind of stuff.
I think that's a downfall and an advantage here, I think, for the film, because I think they know how much we've seen of these characters just from the history of the show. It's a downfall because they rely on that. They rely on the fans or any viewer just having watched all of that and knowing and having some kind of attachment to X-Men. But also it's an advantage because we don't have to go through the whole story again.
Mm. Yeah. To answer that question, do we like Sophie Turner? I don't know yet. Mm. I really don't know. Yeah.
I don't.
Whoa.
Yeah. I don't think she has the acting chops to pull it off. I think because, I mean, a lot of it is mind stuff, right? And the effect that they do where they crack her skin and the things going around her, she doesn't act enough to do anything to pull all of that off. I think my problem with this film was that it was kind of boring. The story was fine. The direction was fine. Editing, all of that was fine. I think it was just boring because there was just long shots of faces and brooding. And I don't think she can brood well enough.
All I can think of when you're talking right now is James McAvoy still doing the hand thing.
He still does
it. Yeah. And Sophie Turner gets to do it too.
Because I do not understand.
He's focusing.
You can focus without two fingers touching your temple. You're fine.
It turns out he's not actually he's not actually a telepath. His finger's telepathic and his brain is just the amplifier.
It's the amplifier,
There are some things, guys, that bother me.
I don't know. I like that. I like that he still does that. I don't know why. I know you're right completely, like just as the same with Scott Summers, do you really need to press the button on the side of your visor to fire the freaking laser?
He needs to get one in his hand like he does.
Just
in the
like
movies.
A button or something. I don't know.
You have the biggest brain in the world. What is the deal with the fingers? All right. Anyway, we're going to continue our X-Men discussion after this. Let us know your thoughts. You can weigh in. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at Skip Intro MY. Write us at movies@bfm.my. We'll be back. This is Skip Intro, BFM 89.9.
Brainy, fancy material. BFM 89.9.
Hello, you are listening to Skip Intro with Lynn, Ian, Julian and Bahe. They were reviewing X-Men Dark Phoenix. So, it is okay. That was the consensus that I appear to have received. I think it is okay to good.
It's better than expected.
It's better than Apocalypse, Origins Wolverine, X3. Everything.
Those are low bars.
Yeah, I know, Origins. But there's only 10, so it's defiantly mid-table.
All right. So I think earlier we were talking about the performance of Sophie Turner. Again, mixed reviews. But what about the other X-folks? How did they do?
Well, we talked before about Professor X putting his finger to his head, but Michael Fassbender does the best metal bending action acting I've ever seen in some of this movie. There's like, he's just standing in front of the helicopter grimacing, and it's hilarious, but also genius.
Oh, no, I didn't find it hilarious at all.
The helicopter bit was hilarious.
I did not find it hilarious.
But they kind of go back to that because they're attacked on a train that's made out of metal, so you can imagine what Magneto does with that. Mm. And that scene is, you know, he's not flashy. Mm. He's efficient. But I think it must be in his claws that he doesn't have to wear the cape and stuff anymore. He wears the helmet, but he's literally just wearing street clothes, and it still works.
I like that. I think Julian had mentioned it as well, that it's normal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, contrary to popular opinion, I love X-Men X2 Last Stand. I think they were a great introduction to superheroes in cinema. I love how costumey and I love how kind of hammy and campy it is, because I love the animated series as well. So to bring it back to now, so First Class, Days of Future Past, and this one, they've made them cool. And it's the most normal they've been. You know, the suits that they wear now, it's not just red leather, yellow leather, you know, it's not
all
of that.
They're like, it's active wear.
Yeah. They're not wearing the grungy leather of the first
X-Men. Not even like January Jones wearing whatever she was wearing as Frost in the first one. So, yeah, I liked that it made it more functional. That's maybe it.
And I think, considering that this is a series that's trying to place them in our world more specifically, because it's going, you know, it started off in history and it's trying to place it where we are, it makes sense that they dress the way you would expect people to dress.
And it is, I had a weird existential crisis when it flocked up on the screen to say 1995. This movie takes place in 1995. That's not a flashback. That's the actual present of the movie. So everyone's just wearing normal. There's no mobile phones, but everyone's pretty much like, you wouldn't know.
Mm.
It's very hard to tell the difference. I don't even know if you'd know the cars were, American cars were from that era. Like it loses some of that charm because there's an awful lot of fun from the 60s and the 70s and the previous ones. I think you lose that a little bit. And they had a little bit of that in the 80s, the 80s segments of Apocalypse.
Well, actually, listening to you run through them earlier, Julian, I was thinking that we've been on quite a journey with the X movies. I mean, it's...
You should read the comics.
you shouldn't read the comics.
No, but aesthetically, with the X-Men movies, they've really kind of journeyed through a lot of different styles. I mean, with the original made by He Who We Don't Name Anymore, they were very costumey, and they were very specific in the "we are the X-Men" and you're waiting for the iconic yellow, and you know there's just a lot going on. And now then you entered the kind of groovy 60s thing,
and there were flight suits there.
Yes, and then in the middle of it, we've also got, we shouldn't forget, things like Logan, which sit within canon but not fully. It's a bit difficult to describe.
I think everyone can agree it sits on the throne on top of all the X-Men movies. It wouldn't be there without the foundation below them, but I think like it's a culmination of an awful lot of...
Yeah, I mean, it's so good that you kind of almost don't want to call it part of the X-Men universe. It's like a really good standalone film, because it really is a good standalone
Logan's
film.
Logan's just a good movie.
It's a great film.
Yeah, really love it. Find it hard to watch again, truth be told, because... Who can do that? But really, really love it. It's a tough watch, which is not... And I think that was my problem with something like The Last Stand. So I was with you until... I was with you two-thirds of the way with like X-Men, X2. X2 starts to tilt a bit, but like I can go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Last Stand just...
That was The Last Stand.
That was too much. That was the last straw.
Last Stand is just so terrible and like stupid in the best way. I mean, you know that scene with Wolverine and Jean and that whole bit? It's so bad.
I love you so much, I'm going to stab you to death.
Yeah, I'll remember it forever. And I like that was like what set off the superhero cinematic thing that we have going on now.
I think that was a speed bump. X3 was a speed bump in the road.
Because that was also kind of what got us going on the terrible sidebar of Wolverine films and the introduction of original Deadpool before it became current Deadpool played by same person. And it's just like...
What a real weird... Like, we live in a comic book universe. It's a weird world that happened.
That's true.
Do you know what's weird? This has all happened in like 19 years. Like, because it's 2000, isn't it? Like 19 and 20. It's really a lot.
Tried things, tried to course correct, and then tried to course correct the course correct, and then tried other things. Man.
So, we've been talking a lot about how, or people have been talking a lot about how Endgame is 11 years, right? Is that right? So it's 11 years of avenging or building up towards avenging. And then on the other hand, you've got the X-Men franchise, which has had double the time. And I think is at about half the level of enthusiasm. So, I mean, for viewers and anticipation. So is it going to change from here? Do you think that, like, Dark Phoenix is going to kickstart something else? Are you guys more excited now about the next thing?
I mean, I think that's something that we've been talking about between the three of us, that what's going to happen now. I mean, so there's the movie universe, right?
Oh, we should say, sorry, there's no post-credits tease on this movie, but it kind of could set up for more, but with the universes, but there's basically Disney owned them now, so we're not going to get these characters again, probably.
So that's what I was going to say, that in universe, something happens that you may or may not want to follow through, but in real world, now these characters are owned by Disney and Marvel, and so do they all fall back in? We don't know whether that's going to be a reboot, whether they're just going to continue from here, we don't know.
I don't want a reboot.
although Julian did mention it was an interesting to do, not as really a reboot, but just to start again. So you don't show me the whole thing about the Nazi camps with Magneto and Professor X and all that, but just sort of move forward the way they did Spider-Man, right?
Yes.
No, you don't want
No. I'm just thinking whether or not, I mean, how many times do we need to watch Uncle Ben die? Fair enough.
I mean, there is, I think, there's a theory that if they ever bring the Fantastic, now they have the Fantastic Four as well with Disney, if they want to bring them in, they could have them trapped in a time bubble since the 60s.
You mean Fantastic cast?
Yes.
You mean that one?
Wait, what?
No.
What did you say?
She's talking about the Josh Trank movie. Fantastic is the way they had it on the poster. Yeah. I kind of like that movie. But even the idea of the Fantastic Four having done an experiment, they're a swinging 60s family, they have an experiment in the 60s and they're trapped in a time bubble and they wake up now. A great way to capture the original spirit of the comic and also explain why they haven't been around. Having the X-Men be clandestine the whole time the Avengers were around feels odd. But if you do reboot it, don't give us Scott and Jean and Professor X. Do it with West Coast Avengers. We were talking before
East Coast
about
Avengers.
Do it with Alpha Flight. Start with the Canadians. Do something different. We don't need these characters again. I mean, they've had trouble. I think Deadpool is going to be the key. They're just going to do Deadpool will be the one who launches the Marvel mutants in the MCU.
I love the OG. I love the OG cast.
I want the OG,
and it was so great to see the OG team in this one. Cast aside, I love James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender as the two of them. I don't know if we need them anymore, even. Let them rest. Let them play chess. Let them just hang out together. That's fine. I always want to see more mutants. And the TV series was great because you get to see more mutants. And the whole dynamic of X-Men, of being in a world where mutants don't want them, that's always been the coolest part of X-Men for me.
Yeah.
And if it's going to continue on from that, I really don't mind. I think it's going to be more interesting than doing Dark Phoenix again.
Yeah, and we can get to Avengers versus X-Men in 2028.
Sure.
Tell us what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You can tweet us, Skip Intro MY. You can write us, movies@bfm.my. In the meantime, thanks for listening. It's been Skip Intro, BFM 89.9.